welcome to 2006. This is Two Insane Fans with our first commentary of 2006, celebrating 10 years of being Two Insane Fans with the Telemovie.
Wow, that was a fantastic introduction.
Boy, I can see the comments on our webpage being good. This is Michael Hickerson again.
This is Sarah Hadley.
And we're watching the 1996 Fox Telemovie, Doctor Who.
Oh, look, Gordon Temple there is sort of dressed like Roger Delgado, if you look really, really close.
Oh, I don't... Cool.
And the Daleks sound like Smurfs.
Well...
You know, when I was 12 years old, I really thought the speech kicked ass. I wouldn't have said it that way, but I really loved that speech. And nowadays, it just seems sort of stupid.
Well, you didn't have a lot of comparison. You hadn't seen a lot of Doctor Who then. You hadn't delved into my vault of giant videos.
Very, very true. I kind of like this opening, even though I still am not wild about the theme tune.
I remember it, because I remember you, when we, we'll get into this later.
He remembers something.
Special guest star, Eric Roberts.
Yeah, like, there's going to be more than one. It's like what they did with Dr. Smith for 3 years on Lost in Space. But, he was always the special guest.
Oh, God, it's aired because you were, like, writing for a fan, like, the fanzine that was going to be distributed to you and me.
Oh, Michael, please.
And you said...
I don't need this history.
But you asked me what I thought of the theme, and I said, I thought it was a very good reworking of the terror theme. And you went, the terror theme? What the hell is wrong with you? So anyway, I'm sorry. Where were we?
Did I actually say what the hell is wrong with you?
No, but you implied it. There was like this long pause where I could tell you were thinking, like, if I hang up, will he notice I didn't say goodbye?
Oh, God. Well, here we are. This is the new TARDIS.
Yes. And McCoy's hands.
Yep. And the toolkit, lovingly recreated from the TARDIS manual, the technical manual, yeah. Because no one had ever actually seen the inside of the toolkit except in Earthshock. And this record here was originally supposed to be Swinging on a Star, which I'm kind of glad it isn't, because Swinging on a Star is a very nice Bing Crosby song, but it's now been utterly... And I think they wanted the Sinatra version. Yeah. But it's now been ruined for all time by being in Hudson Hawk.
You know, I haven't seen Hudson Hawk, so...
You don't need to.
Yeah.
Now, I happen to like this console a lot. I really like the console. I hate the set. All the clocks? I mean, what's up with that?
Well, he's a Time Lord. Don't Time Lords have lots of clocks? See, but I think you and I are putting more thought into this than the writers did.
Apparently. I think the producer's the one who populated it with clocks.
Bastard. I say we kill him. Oh, I mean, we love you.
And he has binoculars. Oh, good.
And here's the 500-year diary. It's
a 900-year diary now.
I mean, that's a nice touch.
Is it a nice touch? Is it really?
Well, I think
because it's the first of about 5 billion nice little touches.
We could pretty much do the whole commentary. Well, that's a nice touch. Well, that's a nice touch. And we'd never say anything.
The jelly babies are at least acceptable because people are going to get it.
Yes. And here he is. He's reading the time machine. Ugh. Apparently the same one Ian was reading back in the day.
And here's where we realize the Doctor has been watching Star Trek VI.
Well,
oh, not quite yet.
Not yet. Not yet. Apparently the Doctor hasn't moved up to CD.
Well, but that kind of seems at least kind of workable for the
Well,
Doctor.
It keeps in the tradition of the, you know, the old Victorian.
Yeah, because McCoy was such an old Victorian.
Yeah. Hmm, something's wrong.
Oh, look, it's a Tempest in a Teacup. Oh God.
It kind of looks to me like one of those... It looks like he's got a latte nowadays.
That's true, it does. Doesn't? I mean, he puts a lot of milk in his tea. Why are we doing this?
I don't know. Anyway, we should actually talk about Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So, here we go. The Master has escaped. Oh, there he is! He's slithering like a snake.
And you know, I remember the snake thing really made me so mad back in the day. Oh. And I just don't care now.
Oh, see, I remember when, like... Okay, well, we were going to wait until about 10 minutes to start these stories, but screw it. I remember this was the first time we had ever met, and we were going to watch this movie, and you came into my house going...
Now, how old was I?
You were like 12.
Yeah.
You said, the Master's supposed to slither like a snake. If he does that, I'm out of here. I don't want to see that. You were... And I was sitting there going like, I've really tried to avoid spoilers, and you had like apparently like knew, like someone had sent you a blow-by-blow of the first 10 minutes of the film, and you were already pissed when you came in. So, it was all downhill from there.
I was pissed and dressed like a freak.
Oh, well, that's okay. No, I also remember what was funny. This is a random story. Nothing related to Doctor Who. Was
thanks a lot, Michael.
You and your dad were coming over, and I was like, crap, because like a friend of mine was giving me the couch, and I had to like go and get the couch that afternoon before you came over, otherwise your dad would have nowhere to sit, except for like a lawn chair. So that's my memory of the telemovie. You being pissed and worried about the couch.
And we'd met because you had put an ad on a... Because we told the story in the Rose commentary, which yes. Then really, really utterly screwed up, technically.
Yes. I think that was... Was that the... No, we didn't re-record the Rose commentary.
No, we didn't. But we met online, and I called you up. Hello.
Yes.
Do you want somebody to come over and watch the TV movie with you? And that's how it went.
Yep.
So we met officially on the 14th of May, 1996.
So now here we are. We're celebrating 10 years, and we're revisiting the television
movie.
Or is it sometimes called The Enemy Within?
Why, we're not sure.
Doctor Who stories are the X of Y. They wanted to have something, I don't know.
But what's the enemy within? Is it the Doctor? Is it the snake? Is it... I never knew.
Oh, look, he could have been the Adric of this series if he had stayed on.
Yeah, I have a friend who is of the opinion that Chang Li is the single worst thing about this movie ever.
Did he see Eric Roberts?
Yes, he did.
Really?
Well, my friend also happens to be of Asian heritage.
Oh, well, I can see that. This
is
not the most flattering portrayal of young Asian people. Now, interestingly enough, I listened to the Gary Russell novelization.
The abridged version of his novel, which is a good novel.
Yes, but at least in the novelization, at least they gave some kind of motivation as to why Chang Li isn't, other than, look, it's a random person in a gang.
Right.
You know, at least there was some kind of backstory, you know, and you can see where it's dropped later in the story. And here comes the TARDIS to save him. It's a good thing that all these bad guys decide to smile and laugh at him before they kill him. kill him in cold blood.
Here comes some flash frames. Some big white flash frames. Yeah. They're coming. My friend Matt Dale's made a big study of these. Yeah, flash frames. Look at those. Mm-hmm. And they show, like, really random parts of the movie in there for, like, 2 oomphs of a second.
So this was doing it before Angel did it on Angel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except Angel's actually did those that actually were transitions between scenes and actually added something to the plot.
Right, exactly. And here's
why did he look at the scanner?
Because it's irony, Michael.
Well, I guess.
Although I remember when I was 12, I was really mad. He didn't get to make a big speech about how they should throw away their guns.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I remember going like, I can't hear anything because she's really pissed. I thought I had explained the rules. When it was new Doctor Who, you didn't talk, but, you know, it was the first time I'd met you, so. So here's Chang Li.
Thanks a lot.
And he's running around.
Yes, McCoy apparently originally had a lot more dialogue. I know in the Bidding Adieu video, he's very upset by the fact that he had, like, 10 pages cut. And I can only assume he had more dialogue either in the TARDIS or in the ambulance, because there's not a lot of other opportunity. But his minimal appearance is very good.
Well, I would have to say that maybe for me, McCoy's appearance is the best thing about the whole telemovie.
It's a nice little thing, although... I honestly do understand why they should not have started with the regeneration.
Yeah.
But once they decided they were going to, it's a good thing they got Sylvester McCoy and did it right. Because I believe both Fox and Philip Siegel wanted Tom Baker. And it was Matthew Jacobs who wrote it who said, no, we get Sylvester McCoy.
And I just wonder, here's the first appearance of Eric Roberts.
And the funny thing about this is he's not actually that bad as Bruce. I've actually seen him in, like, other things, but he's not bad.
He's
what
just
the
not
hell
good.
Happened?
I just wonder if Jane took him by and said, okay, Eric, here's how you play the master. Totally campy. And with velvet.
Well, they originally wanted Christopher Lloyd, and I could see Christopher Lloyd doing it somehow.
Well, yeah, because I guess my image, you know, as a sci-fi fan is Christopher Lloyd is from Back to the Future.
Right, but like every role that Christopher Lloyd has played since Back to the Future 3 is this sort of zany, you know, villain mwaha guy.
Yeah, but he was the Klingon commander in Star Trek 3.
I said since Back to the Future 3.
No, but I'm thinking if he could have pulled off being the master.
He could have. He wouldn't have, but he could have.
Well, yes, and monkeys could fly out of my butt.
Look, more snake.
Oh yes, I remember you were very you were I think you were actively rooting for the snake parts to end because you were so mad about it.
Thank you. This is like a trip down memory lane I didn't need.
Well, I'll read my review originally later, parts of it. I was very mad at this movie.
Yeah, that's true. We were all mad. My dad was probably asleep.
No, I think your dad stayed awake because it was the first time he was going, who is this weirdo? Whose house have I come
true.
To?
That's correct.
So it was only afterwards when he just started realizing that he should bring pizzas to bribe his way into the house. But, oh, here comes some more slithering. You know, this is not a bad effect.
No, I was thinking about that when I was watching the TV movie yesterday. It's for CG work in 1996. Not too shabby.
Well, you know, they did spend, what, $5 million on the budget?
Something like that.
Luckily, they spent like $4,999,909 on the effects. Mm-hmm. And yeah, to make it look good, because they didn't spend a damn on the script.
No.
Just all, and it really, and we're already busting on it. It's only been 10 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely correct. But the funny thing is, this first, what I call the first episode, because this thing goes on without a commercial break for 25 minutes, or at least did on American television, where we have to worry about commercials. I think of that as the first episode. The first episode is not that bad, except for one or two little embarrassing effects, like the regeneration.
Yeah. No, now, who's the... See, the nurse behind him looks familiar. Like, she looks like somebody
She's
I should
cute.
Know from another... She looks like someone I should know from another show.
Well, I know a lot of these extras. Even the guy who played the Master.
Yeah.
I mean, the first Master.
Yeah.
Not Eric Roberts. But a lot of these bit parts came out of, like, the same pool that got a lot of, you know, stuff for Sliders and X-Files.
Yeah. Well, maybe she was a random victim on X-Files.
Yeah, because Gordon Tiplin has played a lot of, like, detectives and bodyguards and things on X-Files.
Now, look, he's very annoyed.
And he's so 80s looking. She comes running down the hall in her skirt, and it's...
She's taking her shoes off.
Something I find interesting, and it didn't impress me this way at the time, but it does now. It's curious to me that the demographic they were going for.
I am
surprised that they cast a woman who is fairly close in age to Paul McGann, in that she was in her mid-30s at the time.
Yeah, which... I just wondered if the series had gone on and become a series.
Right.
Would she have suffered from being like Liz Shaw, where they didn't really know what... You know, Liz Shaw was great at first, but by the time they get to Inferno, they don't really know how to have an equal to Doctor Slump, so they had to write her out and bring in Joe.
Right. Well, I just can't quite figure out what the demographic for this was meant to be. Was it meant to be teens? Because it kind of... The script kind of fits a teen show.
Yeah.
Is it meant to be for adults? Because, I mean, the actual leads...
Yeah.
Fit an adult show, but then there's Chang Li, and then there's the stupid script. And, I mean, it's obviously not for kids.
Maybe.
Who is it for?
Well, I think this is what we talked about. We've talked about this. We debate this, actually, stuff off mic. This was trying to be everything to everyone.
Oh, no kidding.
And it became a amalgam of little tiny bits that worked well in isolation, but when you put them all together, you don't add up to a coherent whole of a story.
And
or a script.
Part of that is this was like the 16 billionth rewrite.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd been trying to do this thing, I think, since 1991. And essentially going from the same Bible since 93 or 94 and changing it completely from the Doctor is a wanderer looking for his father, whose TARDIS is powered by the spirit of his grandfather, President Borussia, to this.
Yeah.
And I think it just kind of, you know... derivative, diminishing returns thing. So by the time they actually did get to this, we are A, lucky it still resembled Doctor Who.
Yes.
And B, it's no surprise it's a dreadful shambles in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And C, it's no surprise that it sort of is asking for all demographics, all people, everywhere.
Well...
That doesn't mean it works.
And I seem to remember when this was coming on, I remember watching X-Files one Friday night, and seen, like, a commercial for it. So I think on some level they were trying to get the X-Files fans. Because that was the big genre show on Fox at the time.
I can only assume that, yes.
And I'm not sure that you would get them because this was pretty much too straightforward.
Right, it's just not bright enough.
They try to have bits and pieces of it, and I'll get, you know, when we get to it later. But
and admittedly, I've only ever seen, like, 10 X-Files episodes, maybe. Probably all from the same season. But, I mean, this is, whether you're a fan of X-Files or not, you've got to admit, this is not as sharp as X-Files is story-wise. and so...
Well, I mean, let's think about it. Up until this point, you know, you don't even have... Your discernible lead is dying. You don't have anyone you can identify with. If you've never seen Doctor Who...
Right, and that is the problem with having him regenerate.
Yeah, you don't have anyone you can identify with. You have no character you like. I mean, at least...
The closest thing you've got is Bruce.
And then Bruce gets taken over by the Master here in a few minutes.
Right, but at least he keeps the same face.
Oh, wait, we're spoiling things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. It's been 10 years, people.
I remember being really sad at the way McCoy died.
And Grace is like, what am I going to do? I'll give McCoy... McCoy seems to get a lot of flack online because a lot of fans don't seem to think he has as much acting ability as some of the other doctors.
Which I would agree with.
But I think he does a... Well, I don't agree, but I think he's...
I know.
But I think he does a very serviceable job with what he's given here.
Oh, I agree. He does a very good job with this. And I actually think he's a better actor than many of his stories made him out to be. I don't think he plays angry well, is my main problem with him. But he does very well in this.
Yes.
And he is capable of a lot better than, say, Time of the Ronnie.
Well, or I wouldn't wish that on
Happiness
someone
Patrol.
I hated. See, now I like Happiness Patrol.
And you can keep it.
Well, and I will.
Good for you.
See, this nurse, she looks like someone... I don't know why. I don't know who she's familiar. But anyway.
Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, no discernible lead. Big problem. And it's just one of many, many, many continuity touches that I think were really profoundly poor ideas.
Yeah.
There's a great as in hideous, info dump from Paul McGann later where it's like, the Master, he's opening the eye! He was exterminated by the Daleks on Skaro, and I brought his body back! And I'm thinking to myself, oh my god, who thought this was good?
But, you know, when they were filming that, they may not have known they were going to go back and rewrite that, rehab that original beginning.
I think, well...
I get the feeling that that intro was a late-minute rewrite edition.
Well, the original version had Gordon Tipple voicing it over as the Master. I don't know if that still exists or not. The rough cut of the movie, which I've seen, features Jeffrey Sachs doing the voiceover himself, but as the Doctor. The visuals still remain largely the same.
Okay.
I think at that point they were trying to keep in little bits of what they'd established previously in earlier versions of the script, like the Daleks, any way they could. And, but you get things here. You get the yo-yo, you get the sonic screwdriver, jelly babies, the scarf.
Yes.
All this stuff. And it's just not important. Maybe the sonic screwdriver, you know?
It's a good thing that there's incompetent hospital people who can push a gurney in front of someone being chased at any time.
Makes me happy for when I have to go to the hospital.
Yeah. You know, have you ever been used to, like, keep someone from escaping with a sonic screwdriver?
No, I've been used in a lot of other ways in hospitals.
Okay.
But,
This is Eric Roberts' wife
at
the time. Who I guess she couldn't get any work on her own, so he got her some work here in Doctor Who.
I think they couldn't find anybody, and so at the last minute they got his wife.
Yeah.
Now, how many people do they have to audition for?
Well, it's not like it's like... I mean, how long could this have taken to film? Like, a day? I mean, it's not like she has a big, giant role.
And I know they tried to get Eric Roberts' stuff out of the way quickest, because he was the most expensive. Now... Let's talk about Eric Roberts a little bit, because it's an appropriate time.
Okay.
Would you like to read the list of people they thought were a good idea for the Master?
Well, we only have an hour and a half for the commentary.
Now, these aren't people they actually auditioned.
This was their wish list.
This was their, wish list of folks.
Which apparently, if you had acted in the United States between after 1980...
and possibly had a beard.
or could grow one. You were on the wish list. Let's see what page. Oh, good. Okay. Well, we talked about Christopher Lloyd.
Who is who they ultimately wanted, but didn't get.
Here's some of the edited highlights. Dan Aykroyd. Richard Dean Anderson. Scott Bakula. James Belushi. Tom Berenger. David Bowie. Okay, here's one. Steve Buscemi.
What?
I'm not making that up. Dana Carvey. Chevy Chase. Oh, wait. Don't take a drink. Wait for it. Phil Collins.
No.
He could have done a couple of courses of Invisible Touch.
oh my god.
Tim Curry. Timothy Dalton.
That could have worked.
Michael Dorn. I don't think I could see Worf. Robert Eglund, who's better known as Freddy. Jonathan Frakes. Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
Gregory Hines.
They wanted Jeff Goldblum for the Doctor, too. I'm not quite sure where that all came from.
Oh, wait. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper.
Actually, I think it would have been better than Eric Roberts.
Chris Isaac. Mick Jagger.
Chris Isaac?
That's what it says. Like I said, apparently if you had ever acted or looked like a person, or John Lithgow, John Malkovich, let's see, next page, Malcolm McDowell, Rick Moranis. Are we coming up to one of my favorite? No, we're not. Okay. Bill Murray.
Judd Nelson?
Oh, wait, read the next one.
Leonard Nimoy. Well, I knew at one point they wanted him for the Doctor.
Randy Quaid. How come Shatner's on the list? Apparently everybody else was.
Oliver
Henry
Platt?
Winkler.
Jonathan Pryce would have been very good, and he ultimately played the role in The Curse of Fatal Death.
Brent Spiner, Patrick Stewart, Kevin Spacey, who might have worked, because he wasn't Kevin Spacey at the time. He wasn't a
right.
big name list.
And Patrick Stewart, they also wanted for the Doctor at one point.
And Michael York, who is probably best known to people listening to this now as Nigel Exposition from the Austin Powers movies.
Or the any number of movies he's done with the Omega Code.
Yes. Yeah, well, let's not hold that against him. And here we go, the blatant... This is good that this was made by Universal, so they could easily get the
Frankenstein
footage.
Yep.
And not have to pay for it.
Unlike that whole swinging on a star thing with
yes.
Sinatra. I should point out, Christopher Lloyd they wanted, they couldn't get him. I think the next person they tried was Sting.
And it's because of getting
Whom they also wanted for the Doctor. I guess because he was like a big Fox favorite.
According to what I read, like, they really wanted McGann.
Gurn.
And that was why we got Eric Roberts, was because the network said, okay, we've got to have somebody, big name.
I think they whittled it down so much with the Doctors that whoever they cast off their list was going to be fairly unknown in this country.
Yeah.
And even if you look at, like, the advertising, like, for in the TV Guide...
Yeah.
There was a big ad, full-page ad, and Eric Roberts' face is huge, and Paul McGann's is like one-third of the size. So they wanted some big star who has also probably done a lot of Fox stuff. I mean, I know I saw him in a Fox TV movie like the next month. And
now we have some very, as the Doctor is regenerating, and the lighting effects are very good in this.
Oh, I think the cinematography in this movie is largely quite nice. And the lighting is quite nice. It looks expensive, for lack of a better term.
Well, it looks like they had a budget and they could actually move the camera around.
I mean, I may not love that TARDIS set, but it's very well lit. And the console, very nice. It actually does better, I think, at showing that whole different pieces taken from across time than the new one does. It's funny, it's the reverse. In the new show, I like the set, but not the console.
Yeah.
In this one, I like the console, but not the set.
So basically, you would just combine the two.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a good thing they had a room that wasn't just the Doctor lying in one of those little drawers. It'd be hard for him to get out of.
Yeah.
And now...
Oh.
Here
yeah.
it comes.
Yeah. And this is where it just... And...
Oh, the wacky fun!
And that's, of course, the guy... I forget his name. Will Sasso? Is his name Will Sasso? Became much better known on Mad TV, and now I believe he's on Andy Dick's sitcom.
Does Andy Dick have a sitcom still?
Or did? Something? I don't follow sitcoms, so
no,
I mean...
I haven't really followed Andy Dick since he left News Radio.
I don't have cable anyway, but even when I did, I didn't watch sitcoms. I'm just not a sitcom person.
Wow.
I know you are.
But I don't... But Andy Dick. Anyway...
Yeah, but whatever one he had, I at least know a year ago at this time, I turned on a television and there was Will Sasso on it as, like, a semi-regular or something. I'm sure someone will write in and correct us on this once they've bitched about
how much we suck overall. And let me just say to the guy who, like, commented on how much we suck, yeah, you suck. So anyway, moving on.
We respect your opinion, but...
You suck. Anyway.
Yeah. And consider you wouldn't have lasted this long.
Yeah.
Because it's 24 and a half minutes in.
Yeah, so... I don't even know why I'm talking to him, since he's not listening anymore.
Yeah. But, by and large, aside from the crappy regeneration effects, I like this first episode. Even though it as drama, as sellable, marketable drama, it doesn't work at all. As something I sit and watch on television and pretend is Doctor Who, it's okay. I can stand it.
Lots of use of mirrors in this
thing. I remember there was a rumor at the time that when the Doctor saw his face in mirrors, it was going to be old Doctors.
Oh, God.
And I was brutally disappointed at 12. that it wasn't. But these days, I'm just glad they avoided one more continuity reference. His voice cracks.
Eric Roberts. And now, and the shark has jumped on the performance.
Here is the one piece of continuity from after Legopolis. I wanted to mention this.
Okay.
When Phil Siegel started ordering videos and stuff from the BBC, because he was so convinced he wanted to bring it back,
yes,
he chiefly focused on Hartnell, Troughton, and, of course, Tom Baker. And if you watch the movie, it's largely made up of elements from the first four Doctors, and yeah, particularly Spearhead from Space, yeah, and the Deadly Assassin. Then there's the Cloister Bell from Legopolis. Yes. And then there's these eyes from the Master, who... Yes. I forget, there was some reason in the earlier drafts why he had different eyes, and I think they kind of reverted that to the Cheetah People thing.
Yeah.
But it's like the one post-Tom Baker reference.
And here's and the, there's scarf. The scarf.
God. Useless continuity reference, 43,000.
Well, why... And then, yeah, I guess, you know, here's the animal retentive part. Be like, why would someone have that scarf sitting in their locker?
Because they're going to dress as the Fourth Doctor for the Halloween party.
But then...
I know.
That just confuses things. And Chandler's like, what's this?
The sonic screwdriver is one of the very few things that perhaps wasn't a bad idea to put in.
Yeah.
The jelly babies weren't a bad idea either. They're candy. You know what they are. Yeah. It's easy.
No.
But a lot of this crap just needed to have gone.
And I just think... Did I already make this point? You know, if you're just tuning in, it takes a long time for this thing to get started.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're at 20-some-odd minutes. Mm-hmm. 27, and the thing still hasn't even... The plot hasn't even really begun yet.
That's right. Paul McGann himself does not realize he's the Doctor and start being the Doctor until after the halfway point.
Yeah.
I actually looked. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's absolutely maddening.
But, see, that makes me wonder, because the influence of... It would seem like that was the influence of, you know, later Doctor stories... seemed to be that the Doctor would lose his memory for long chunks of time in the regeneration stories. You know, like, Power of the Daleks, he's pretty much, he's kind of wacky for about 10 minutes, and then, bang, right, he's out there. Oh, here comes my favorite line.
It's not my favorite, mine's later.
And look at Eric Roberts. He's hilarious.
So he tries out for Playgirl.
Yes.
Well, at least we didn't
come back to bed.
At least you didn't get topless Christopher Lloyd.
Well, I don't think Christopher Lloyd would have done this topless.
That's true.
You can call me Master.
Oh, okay, God. Master.
Then he turns around. And. And he kills her.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Let's while we're talking about Mr. Robert, let's be hilarious here.
Oh, yes.
From my original review written back after this aired.
10 years ago.
And I was very mad at the time. And maybe I'll read parts of that later.
Things have changed.
But then I go on and on and on about things I didn't like. But wait, here's something I did like.
Oh, and trust me, he goes on. Like, for 3 pages, he goes on about everything he dislikes.
And I hope you're sitting down for this. Eric Roberts as the Master was pretty good.
That's all you need to know, right there.
He's no Roger Delgado, but he did a pretty good job.
Oh, God, help us all.
Yeah, I take that back. I rescind all of that now.
Let's talk about Eric Roberts just a little bit more.
Why the hell was he chosen for this role? I mean, other than being Julia's brother.
Because he's a Fox favorite. He's done a lot of TV movies for them. And apparently they thought he was going to be cheaper than Christopher Lloyd, except he ended up not being cheaper than Christopher Lloyd. But the man has, like, a whole bevy of problems. He apparently watched Doctor Who in Britain when he was a student,
yes,
but he thought the Master was some sort of thing of black goo, which I have no idea what that would have been.
Now, that was Armus from that Next Generation episode, Skin of Evil. He's mixing them up again.
I mean, if I think of, like, all the Tom Baker stories, yeah, he possibly could have seen, I can't imagine what one with black goo would have been.
Unless he's thinking of Deadly Assassin with him running around being scarred and burned.
That's... possible, I guess.
That's about the closest to... Well, he wasn't kind of oozy and ugly.
Alright.
That's about as close to as I can get.
So that's, you know, that's disturbing enough. But then we have... They apparently designed a whole wardrobe for the man. Which
he
was
didn't like it.
Based on Roger Delgado's costume, so it would have been like a tunic and
yeah,
that sort of thing. He didn't like it.
Yeah.
So ended up wearing his own clothes, which were Terminator Redux.
Yeah.
He didn't like the contact lenses, so he wanted to wear them as little as possible, so he got those sunglasses. And,
and here we go to try and appease the X-Files fans, some kind of conspiracy where we burn
the X-ray. That lasts a long time, doesn't it?
Unless all of this one scene. Now, did I miss a point earlier? Because when I was rewatching this to get ready for the commentary, didn't they say they took several X-rays and they thought that they were broken?
Double exposures?
So wouldn't there be more lying around somewhere other than just one that they're burning? Or is he just going to go burn all of them in the hospital? He does seem an officious little bureaucrat, so he probably bet you he burned them all.
I just can't believe somebody would think that was a double exposure. I'm just going to stop now. It's not worth it.
But, you know, if Grace was actually, you know, if she was so excited and passionate about wanting to prove she was right, couldn't she go run to radiology and get one of the others?
Yeah.
But she doesn't. I guess because Brian left her.
Yeah.
Brian. I mean, Brian's our friend now, and he left Grace. Come on, Brian.
Ran off to Tennessee.
Yeah.
And what else didn't Eric Roberts like? He didn't like the prosthetics that were involved in making his flesh start to fall off. Because I remember that distinctly. Before the movie was actually on, there was all this talk that he was going to decay over the course of the film, very Deadly Assassin style. And then in the finished film, all you see in about a minute here is him pull off a fingernail.
So basically what Eric Roberts liked about Doctor Who was the paycheck.
And that he had, like, more control than anybody else because he was the big star. It's one of those big fish in small pond things.
Yes.
That's all been re-looped, I believe. This whole conversation is very different from Rough Cut. Or maybe it's the Canadian reel. Matt could tell me.
There was a Canadian reel?
Yeah.
Did they say a boot a lot?
Well, there's a Canadian promo reel that has different versions, and this is one of the scenes I believe they took from it.
Oh, okay.
And put on the DVD. I don't have the official Region 2 DVD yet.
No, I need to get that. I'd like to hear who does the commentary?
Jeffrey Sachs.
The director.
They asked McGann, he declined.
Does Jeffrey Sachs apologize a lot?
I don't recall.
I'm sorry.
What I do recall chiefly is something I'll bring up in about a few minutes. Well, I'll get to it.
Yeah.
But, because it's really not appropriate at this... Ew, gross. It's not quite appropriate at this precise moment. My other favorite thing, my personal favorite thing that Eric Roberts didn't like, that Paul McGann mentioned in an interview last year, is that Eric Roberts apparently stayed away from Paul McGann because he thought he was really, really effeminate and gay. Because, of course, Eric Roberts himself is playing the very definition of machismo in this film.
Did Eric Roberts see his performance in this film, or is he just denying it?
And apparently he didn't, like, understand that McGann was the same guy at the end of the day because he took his wig off.
Well, that would actually explain a lot about... Well, obviously, you see the world's not going through to hell yet because he can't pass through glass. Like, later. Yeah, this was interesting. You know, this was made in 1990... aired in 1996.
So it was made, I believe it was actually made in early 96, like January, February.
Yeah, but then you've got this whole thing about, it's December 31st, 1999. It's the end of the world!
All before Y2K.
Yes.
God, can you believe it's been 10 years?
I try not to, because then I think about how old I am now.
I think about how old I am now. I feel ancient at 22.
What? Asian child.
You know, oh, God.
I'm remembering, now I've listened to the Star Trek 2 commentary, parts of it by Nicholas Meyer, and he talks about, you know, why is it that Star Trek 2 is one of William Shatner's better performances? And basically he says he put the camera up and he would just do it and do it and do it until Shatner got so damn tired and bored of doing the same things over again that he would stop doing Shatner. I wish they had done more scenes with Eric Roberts before, you know, like over and over until he stopped being Eric Roberts. It might have worked.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Brian is a jackass. He took the couch.
And apparently the cast of Parts the Clonus Horror are going jogging behind Grace's house.
Yes. Oh, God.
They're going off to march and campaign against the island. Hi. Totally superfluous modern-day reference.
Yes. Oh. So Grace and Brian live together. Grace is a fallen woman.
Once again, not quite sure who the demographic is for this thing.
Well, you know, that kind of goes, you know, okay.
Because when it's with the Doctor and Grace, I think it's an adult drama.
Yeah.
When it's with the Master and Chang-Li, I'm thinking it's a teen thing. And when the Doctor and the Master fight at the end, I'm thinking it's for 12-year-olds.
Well, this kind of goes against, you know, the whole, you know, let's face it. You know, even though you kind of, you know, the actors, and I use the word actor loosely when talking about Matthew Waterhouse, played scenes with Nyssa and Adric, you know, you kind of get that subtext of, yes, Nyssa and Adric were back in the TARDIS between adventures having a good time.
No, I tell you again,
yeah,
Nyssa
okay,
and
I'm sorry.
Tegan.
But
get it right.
But, you know, there was never any confirmation on screen. Like,
oh, no.
Like here with Grace of, by the way, she's sleeping with Brian.
Well, she's also like 35, Michael.
Oh, I know. But, you know, but even Liz Shaw never had that kind of, you know. The companions were always very virginous,
well,
very virtuous.
That's because Liz Shaw is a scientist, so she's frigid.
Oh, yes.
Incidentally, a word my mother hates. I referred to Martha Stewart once as frigid, and my mother told me not to ever say that again. That was like last year.
Ah, so just call her a bitch next time.
So I proceeded to say, but she's really frigid, at which point my mother just exploded. It was fun. Oh.
The dead stay dead.
Oh, he's already had the line about how he has 13 lives, which is the line that Sean Lyon caught in the rough cut from being 12 lives, because we all desperately needed to catch that continuity error.
Well, you know, if they had left that in, we would all have been screaming on the internet, just like my 4 pages of review here.
yeah. But...
Oh, goodness. Let's see. We actually made notes this time before you started talking, so let's see what we haven't covered yet that's not be happening on screen.
Well, I don't think the Paul McGann stuff is quite appropriate yet until he becomes the Doctor.
Okay. I just want to make sure we're not going to miss anything.
We've done Eric Roberts. We've really... And we're going to make more fun of Eric Roberts, because it just gets sillier.
It is. You know, this was interesting. You know, when I was looking into this movie, I thought, you know, what else has Daphne Ashbrook done? Pretty much nothing. You know...
Melora... The best episode of Star Trek ever!
Sarah loves Melora.
Sarah has a personal vendetta against Melora.
I'm going to buy you that on DVD for your birthday.
I have it on DVD.
Oh,
it
yeah.
comes as part of the freaking set.
Oh,
okay. I like this moment, actually.
Wait. Giant continuity error coming up.
I just like that bit where Lee walks in and is like, nuh-uh, and walks back out. That's actually pretty funny.
You know, I kind of get the feeling of watching this time, he's channeling Matthew Waterhouse. Because have I talked about on a commentary where... On the Earthshock, where they talk about how Matthew Waterhouse walks in and he's just like, basically he's like walking around a maze and no one has caught on that he's on the set and hasn't thrown him off yet.
Yep.
That's what he looks like right here.
I just like that look. It's sort of like, nope, can't believe it, never mind. See, again, the really strange, expansive set.
Yeah.
With all these clocks and files and things. I don't understand. I also didn't understand why the Seal of Rassilon need to be on everything.
How did the Master get in the TARDIS?
Nobody knows.
I find it funny because I was like reading online or reading somewhere this, and they just went, "Oh well, it's a continuity error. We can't do anything about it." And just, I guess they thought we wouldn't catch it.
Maybe he has a key.
Well, he is in there in Scream of the Shalka, hanging out.
Well, but that's like an alternate universe now.
Yeah.
I mean, surely he knows how to get in. I mean, Delgado's been in the.
He doesn't have a key.
Maybe he might know how to.
To Jimmy the lock.
Maybe.
Wasn't he run off somewhere then? Why doesn't he take the TARDIS and run off?
Because he can't do anything, because the TARDIS only likes Chang-Li. Oh, God, who knows?
God, I think we're putting more thought into this than Matthew Jacobs did.
Because
we spent like 2 minutes, and that was probably more than they did.
Well, Matthew Jacobs is the one who wanted to have apparently a big showdown with the Doctor and the Master and the Doctor's subconscious. Or sorry, no, inside the Eye of Harmony, in which the Doctor would say, "My name is Love." Yeah, you gotta read that version.
That's, oh my God!
You know, the Master's like, "Who are you? I'm the Master." And the Doctor says, "The Master's not a real name. My name is... I think my name is Love." And I personally like the BBC controller, who I think was Alan Yentob, wrote back something like, "Let's maybe play down the love stuff."
Yeah, it seemed like a line he would try to use to hook up with Grace, actually. "Hi, baby. My name is Love."
yeah.
Are we coming up to a commercial break? Because we want to split this
up
so we don't, you know, lose any of our great commentary. So,
yes. We'll
be right back. Oh, wait. Was that a commentary? Was that a break?
That was not a commercial break.
Oh, okay.
They may have inserted one artificially.
I don't remember.
We could have just, you know, stopped it there.
We could have. But then our legions of fans would be like, what?
All right, what's something else we can talk about? But Daphne Ashbrook, not in a whole bunch of things.
Yeah. No, I think that was a commercial break. because the shoes is after a break.
I think they made it into one, even though it's not a proper fade to black.
Oh, okay.
There's another one of those later. It's like the Coda, where they did that.
Sherlock Holmes moment. Give a big shout out to our friends over at the commentaries who did their commentary on this first.
Yes, here I've been calling them the MMM commentaries. Really, I went and looked at their websites. Commentaries.
Hey guys, how you doing? I know that one of them has listened to our other commentaries and.
Do you like them?
He left the comments. He said he thought they were pretty good.
Well, then we like him. Yes. Hey, buddy.
So you know, no, they do a good job.
They do.
Interesting job. You know, and I find them enjoyable.
Because I listened to them, even though I apparently didn't know they left us guestbook comments.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I have a busy university life.
But, so maybe we can get with them and, you know, for our big giant commentary of Doom we're trying to arrange.
I think we should just do like the Daleks Master Plan, get everybody in for 12 episodes.
Maybe Gary Russell will come and moderate for us.
It's like everyone we've ever met. Yes. These shoes, they fit perfectly.
Yeah, see, now this is pretty cool.
Yeah, let's talk about the... Oh, let's not, never mind.
The what?
Not quite. Never mind.
Blatantly obvious Christian symbolism?
No, let's wait for a good moment with that.
Okay. Yeah, we missed the first obvious moment.
Yeah. There's so many! Gold Dust. Another useless continuity reference.
Yeah, I don't see why you would care about big dust.
For Cybermen, obviously.
Yeah, but how is Chang Li going to go change it? Where is he going to explain that he got all this dust from? Okay, we're thinking again.
Do we have anything more to complain about with Eric Roberts?
I'm sure. Oh, well, when we get there, we will.
I like our notes. They read Eric Roberts, casting, costume. What was the next thing?
Prosthetic, peeling, dropped, bad acting. Thought Paul McGann effeminate.
That's nice.
Well, I guess we could talk about, since you know, this seems like be a good point. Now I remember when Virgin was publishing the New Adventures and doing a very good job, better than the BBC. But anyway. They published, after this came out, a novel called The Dying Days.
Yeah, the first Eighth Doctor novel. Came out about a year later.
Which, apparently, if you have one, you're one of the... Because they didn't print as many of this one, and they never did any reprints.
Right.
So it's very infamous in the fan community as being hard to find.
Even though it's now online for everyone
for free.
To read.
But I remember when I found it, because I remember looking for it for a... Because I remember you called me and said, "It's going to be rare! You've got to get it when you see it! Kill someone if you have to!"
And okay. I was right, wasn't I?
Well, yeah. I should have got... They had two copies. I should have got both.
I think I've got two.
But anyway. Selfish. Anyway, I've still got my original copy that I read. And I remember reading it and thinking, this is basically Lance Perkins saying, you know what, that telemovie sucked. I could have taken the same elements and done a better story.
Yeah.
Earth, human, you know, la la la, the Doctor is just regenerated, interacting with people. And then he even comes down with the line, "I am the Doctor," which ends the book. Or is the big moment when the Doctor comes back from apparently being dead for like hundreds of pages?
Right, it's a big climax.
You know, which is one of the great moments in all of the novels, I think.
Right. That's a very good book. I reread it a couple of years ago when they put it online in slightly altered form, but largely the same.
So, you know, it's free. You can go over to the BBC website.
It's quite good.
If you haven't read it, you should.
And even if you're not like a big novels person, it's pretty light on the whole continuity thing. Just give it a go. It's fun. And we're coming up on my favorite Master moment.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. It's coming soon. It's not quite here yet, but it's coming. The Eye of Harmony.
I remember reading this. Oh, God. They put in a lot of stuff that were like little continuity references to the series and spent a lot on the set design. And you can tell they did. You can tell they thought they were going to be able to use this set
again
for the series.
Again and again and again.
I just wonder if this had gone to a series, because you know how on Star Trek, they always have an episode or two that has to take place entirely on the Enterprise, with standing sets.
Yep.
Would they have had a whole episode, you know, where they do a wacky musical in the cloister room or something?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure there would have been something that would have entered through the Eye of Harmony, or, you know, power would have drained from the Eye of Harmony, or the Doctor would have been sucked into the Eye of Harmony.
The Eye of Harmony would have sung harmony with the Doctor.
I think it's actually partially why the Master is sucked in at the end of the story, is so that when they need the Master back again, he can, you know, fly out of the Eye.
Here's giant exposition time.
Oh, yes.
In case you tuned in late and missed the setup.
Oh, it's coming in a minute here, the ultimate bad info dump.
Yes.
But first we get the kiss.
Aww.
Which really just doesn't bother me anymore.
Like, the first time that they do it, this one is not as gratuitous as
later.
The one at the end where it's just like, you know.
It really just doesn't bug me anymore.
Well, that's because you've seen Christopher Eccleston's Doctor, you know, kiss Rose. And kiss Captain Jack.
Oh, here's McCoy. I really like this McCoy outfit. When I had to play him in a skit thing, went for the kind of TV movie approach. It's a very nice outfit. Gives him a little gravity.
And apparently McCoy did not like the checker, the question marks on the sweater.
Did anyone? He liked the umbrella. I mean, I like
thought
the
it looked
umbrella.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, I need to get out more, so.
Yeah. I think they were originally planning on having... Oh, here we go!
Now, why is he...
Shh. Human eye! The doctor is half human! It's my favorite line. The doctor is half human. Oh, God, it's painful. Sorry, you were saying.
I don't remember. The half human thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here we go, the giant...
Info dump of doom? It's coming. It's when he starts to stoop over. And I will die!
Apparently he's been to the Eric Roberts School of Acting.
Here, he's gonna, like, bend over. Here we go.
No, why?
It's very strange.
It's amazing that San Francisco, everyone knows everyone else.
And he closes his eyes, and he starts babbling on about, you know, the master. He was exterminated on Scarrow by the Daleks. This bit right here.
Now, see, I just wonder because I was reading, I may be stealing from the guys on this one. They talked about the book. The Eighth Doctor is very bland. And I saw someone.
Sorry, what book?
The novelization of the movie.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I'm talking about the Gary Russell novelization. Like the Seventh Doctor's parts are very well written and realized, and there's a lot of good stuff in the background. And in the Eighth Doctor, it could be anyone in there.
Right.
And how much of the Eighth Doctor here? I mean, how much of that was like that in the script, where they didn't know who it was going to be, who was going to play it, and
I'm
how
sure
much of this was
true.
All was the Eighth Doctor is all. That we like was all Paul McGann.
I'd say a fair amount of that is the case.
You know, I mean, because I think
because you can't really write vocal tics into a script and stuff.
Yeah, well, you can't do this kind of quirky. I wonder, you know, if they had to refilm it several times, you know, to make sure they got the same take, you know.
Right.
Because there's so much camera room. It's not like the old BBC where you set a camera and you just filmed it and that was it and you went on with your life.
God, that's a lame laugh. The novelization's quite good, though.
Yeah.
And there's several bits Gary Russell had to cut out. They forced him to cut out, one of which was that Chang Li saw all of the doctors up in, like, not the Eye of Harmony, but this thing that expanded into the ceiling. And he saw all of them in sort of a Davison opening titles sort of way. And there was also a long bit with the Seventh Doctor on Scarrow and some other stuff. It's quite good. It was printed in Friends of Doctor Who, one of the issues of the newsletter. And it was online for a long time on Gary Russell's website. I'm not sure if it still is.
But the BBC probably made him take it down.
But if you're interested, you might want to hunt around for it, because it makes a nice little supplement to the novel.
That might have been one of their stipulations for him getting to work on the Big Finish book, audios.
It was up last year. It might not be by now with the new series. This is one of those bits that got... There's a lot of little TV movie references in the new series, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, Paul McGann, this is a good time to talk about this now, is by and large the one thing everybody can agree on is a good thing about the TV movie. Paul McGann is good.
Yeah.
We like Paul McGann.
And I love this part where, you know, I wish I had remembered this on New Year's Eve 1999 to try and go and walk through liquid glass. I forgot! I was so worried about Y2K, I forgot. Ooh, I can go through glass and not break it.
I remember they used this in all the Fox trailers.
Yeah, and you were kind of like, what the...
He's really got a lot of good gravity. And
yeah.
I've now, since the TV movie has aired, I've seen Paul McGann in a number of roles. His very famous With Nell and I.
Yes.
He's
which
done
I haven't
some,
seen.
You really need to. Some supporting stuff in Poirot, in Hornblower. Does a wonderful little movie with Florence Hoth, who's in The Empty Child, which is called Fairy Tale. It's a hideous title, but it's a really good little take on the English turn-of-the-century fairy hoax.
Okay.
In which he plays Florence Hoth's father, actually. Very nice movie. And I've also seen him play a suspected child killer in a TV, I guess, two-part miniseries called Forgotten. Very versatile actor. Very talented. Probably, I think, along with Patrick Troughton, the most actorly actor to play the Doctor, in that he's not a personality. He's truly a character actor.
You can also tell the age of this movie just is not related to Paul McGann because they're not watching Fox News. Today, like on 24, they're always tuned to Fox News.
Right, because it's Fox.
So, you know, I think if they had done this movie today...
Oh, yeah.
And they have two female news anchors.
Interesting. Well, I believe we're real news anchors, or real, like, Toronto area people.
And now the doctor's interested.
But yeah, I would like to bring up at this point, because nothing's happening, that I really do consider Paul McGann my doctor, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
Not that he's my favorite, because he's not. He's kind of... He's up there. I mean, he's not my favorite. He's not my least favorite. He's sort of midway. But he's the doctor I think of as being my generation's.
Yes.
In that we had the TV movie when I was 12. And we had the books. Eventually we had the audio series with Paul McGann up to the time I was in college. So, to my mind, even though he's only been on TV the once, he's very strongly my doctor, and I have a real connection to him that way. Yeah. Which is sort of interesting. It's very weird to have that kind of hero character who's only on your television once.
And Grace does not notice, I don't know, that Chang Li is driving the guy who stole the stuff from them last night was the one who's driving the ambulance.
But we know all Asians look the same.
Oh, is that the explanation we're going with? It's good thing to know that Grace is racist. That way.
I don't know. I don't know why she... I mean, everybody knows each other. Why doesn't she know Bruce?
Yeah. Did you know, when they called him Bruce, have you ever heard that old Monty Python sketch where everyone's name is Bruce?
No.
Oh! I think it's insulting to Australians, if I remember correctly.
Great.
But it's like guy comes in, oh, what's your name? Couldn't we call you Bruce to keep the confusion down? Everyone's called Bruce in the room. Michael Baldwin Bruce! Michael Baldwin Bruce! Michael Baldwin Bruce! I guess that's what I think of when I hear the name Bruce, the ambulance driver. I've just expanded your horizons of comedy.
You have indeed. that's very sweet of you, thank you.
I do what I can.
So we've covered Eric Roberts, we've covered Paul McGann and how great he is. Perhaps we could talk about slime now.
You slime me!
Because that's one of the bits I hated in 96 and I still hate it now. Why is the Master able to slime people?
Because he's, Snakey Lakey. Oh, God, that was bad. Oh, why did this not get nominated for an Emmy? Oh, I know, because the acting by Eric Roberts was universally bad.
Didn't it win a freaking Saturn Award for, like, the best TV science fiction that year?
What the hell was it up against?
Sliders.
Well, then I guess that's why.
Sliders, the show they ultimately picked to go with instead of this. Although... it should be mentioned that despite all that stuff about, you know, they wanted to make it into a series, by the time the TV movie was actually being made, I think they'd pretty much given up on that.
Yeah.
And it was going to be, if it was successful, which it wasn't, if it was successful, it was going to be like a series of four movies each year, four TV movies, which I can't honestly see working without, like, a very accepted property. I mean, it's the sort of thing Joss Whedon is talking about doing now with old Buffy characters.
Yeah.
And even that's a bit of a risk, I think.
Well, I just wonder, you know, and this movie was actually so underperformed in the United States that this is why we don't have it on DVD in the U.S. yet.
No.
Because
we don't have it on DVD in the U.S. because Universal owns it.
Yeah. Well, for a long time, remember, the VHS didn't come out because the Fox had the right until a certain... When was it? It was for a long time.
Oh, now it's reverted to Universal because it shows up on the Sci-Fi Channel.
And so now, and then...
My guess is if the new series is a hit in America, then we'll see it released.
Well, because
Universal will own it.
Well, you think Universal would say, you know what? The BBC has already done all the work. All we have to do is repackage this damn thing.
Yeah. Well, how much you want to bet me that we'll see it rebroadcast on the Sci-Fi Channel, like, the night before the new series starts?
Oh, I'm sure. And that may turn off some fans.
It will. But I bet you if it's a hit, that Universal will run that thing right out on the DVD so fast.
And will we get the BBC edition or will we get a Bare Bones edition, I wonder?
My guess is we'll get a Bare Bones American edition because they don't have a deal with the BBC like Warner does.
Yeah, but you would think that they would because it'd just almost be a license to print money if it's a big enough hit.
As I've heard, the BBC Region 2 edition is not that great anyway. It doesn't have that many features. So,
well,
like a couple of deleted scenes
and
music and the director commentary.
Well, it was one of the... Was it the second DVD that came out?
No, it was like the fifth. It was very early on in the game,
yeah,
shall we say.
When they were still busy.
But there was like 15 good minutes from the rough cut they could have included. Lots of, they didn't include any Fox trailers. And that's actually one of the things I would expect to show up on the American edition is Fox trailers.
They may not have had the rights to them.
That's possible, but...
Or they didn't want to pay for them.
Yeah.
You know.
So, anyway. But it'll be interesting to see if it comes out.
So, I'm sure there'll be many happy American fans if it does.
Well, I'd like to have a proper DVD edition.
It'd be nice. But, you know.
I've actually come to accept the movie a lot more than I did when I was 12.
Well, you know,
it's become another piece of Doctor Who. I mean, at the time, we so badly wanted this big event, this big, wonderful event that, you know, everyone would just love, and it just didn't happen. But nowadays, we have a new series, you know, it's not the end all, it's just another Doctor Who story.
Well, I think this movie proves why that they needed to have, why the new series worked, you know, after they had the first introductory story. You still had 12 other episodes to go.
Sure.
You didn't have to put all your eggs in one basket for one story.
Well, and you'll notice how much with Rose, how little new, how little old continuity there is. There's the sonic screwdriver, and there's the Autons.
Yeah.
And that's, like, it.
Yeah.
And the Autons are, you know, not villains you have to explain.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, we just passed the line where Rose talks about on the back of the motorcycle, she finally meets the right guy. And I'm like, she just broke up with Brian, like, a day ago.
You mean Grace?
Did I say Rose?
You said Rose.
Okay, I'm sorry. Talking about Grace here, where, you know, she's just met the Doctor. Oh, now they're... obviously, Bruce didn't mean very much to her.
I guess not. Bed warmer.
I guess. And couch provider. I think we're getting ready to go to a commercial, so we'll be right back, maybe?
Yeah, it's a commercial, definitely.
All right.
Well, gee, that was a really long gap of about 2 seconds there, wasn't it?
It was more like three.
Oh,
but, you know,
okay.
We can travel back in time later.
Alright, well, since then we've got a long, dull lull in the action here as the Doctor predicts people's futures.
Yeah, which I still find kind of a bit annoying.
We'd like to regale you with some premises from the Leakley Bible. The Leakley Bible is famously the Bible that was made, I think, in, is it 93 or 94?
It doesn't really say... Here.
But the Leakley Bible was the production Bible used for the series.
Yes.
Which had largely changed by the time Paul McGann and everybody else started actually filming. I think it was still very much in effect when he was cast. But it was all about how, you know, the Doctor was seeking his father and was being chased around the universe by the Master and the Daleks. And all that wacky stuff. And Peter O'Toole is going to be the voice of President Barusa, who now lived in as a spirit in the TARDIS and all this...
So what we're saying here is it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, exactly. But one thing that did keep up through all the incarnations of the TV movie, up through the final one where they were still talking about 4 TV movies a year, was that they wanted to remake some old stories.
Yes.
We have the list here of the stories that the Leakley Bible proposes they remake.
Yes.
You want to go over that, Michael?
One of them would have been elements from Genesis of the Daleks, which I think... That would have been, like, one of the... In the pilots.
Mm-hmm.
Which... I was reviewing the Nth Doctor to do this, and I was just amazed at how busy some of these pilots were, where it was...
Oh, yeah.
It was like...
We go to
here,
space.
Here,
we
here,
go to Egypt.
Here.
It's like the Daleks' master plan.
I was like going, yeah, you couldn't have done it in an hour and a half.
It gives you new respect for the TV movie, really.
I was getting ill just sitting there reading it, and I was like going, good God. You know, they would have spent maybe 2 seconds on Scarrow. Or, more likely, they would have spent a lot of money on huge Dalek battles.
There's the half-human line.
Yes.
Does this bother us anymore?
I'm over it. I've moved on with it. I have other things to worry about now.
Yeah, me too.
Like Buffy continuity.
So,
anyway.
Just take them in order, because they're all pretty rich.
The Smugglers was going to be reworked.
As the Pirates, basically just the premise, not really the story.
Talons of Wing Chiang were relocated to the present New York. Which that would eliminate all of the atmosphere and what makes Talons so loved.
Well, they could have more Chinese gangs like they do in this one.
Yes, because Chinese people have... Apparently Chinese people really haven't done very well for themselves on Doctor Who, have they?
Probably not.
They're not very well portrayed.
Marco Polo, they do pretty well.
Well, yeah, that was then.
And that's why that one's lost.
The Horror of Fang Rock.
Relocated to?
Well, there's two. There was one that was going to be relocated to Nantucket. Making up all the jokes about the bucket. And then to Cape Cod.
Oh my God. Next!
The Celestial Toymaker?
That was where the Master had found the Celestial Toymaker's universe and was using it to his own design. So why the hell are you calling it the Celestial Toymaker?
Because you can. Okay, here's the one that I think would have been universally loved by every fan of Doctor Who. Would have been the classic. It would have been like the Curse of Fenric of this series. Wait for it. Are you sitting down? I hope if you're listening at home, I hope you're sitting down. I hope you're not, you know, listening to this while you're like working out or something, because you're about to fly off the treadmill. Because this is a damn good idea. They were going to remake the Gunfighters.
But again, as a premise, not the story, really.
Because apparently they had lost a bet with Satan.
Go on.
Tomb of the Cybes, which would have been... The Cybes was the new version of the Cybermen.
It kind of looked like Native Americans with cybernetic parts grafted on. They were supposed to be like the scavengers of the universe. God help us all.
The Abominable Snowmen.
Yeah, with the Yeti, I believe, made into nice, pleasant beings.
Well, of course, and you could sell teddy bears.
Mm-hmm.
Ark in Space.
Yeah.
God. It's just like, let's just crap on Robert Holmes' memory here.
Come on.
The Sea Devils.
Sea Devils?
That's what it says.
I don't
here.
Remember that one. Okay.
Now set off the shore of Louisiana, but effectively the same as the 1972 serial.
The shores of Louisiana?
Yeah, it was before.
Wouldn't that have been nice if that was like modern day during... I'm sorry. It just...
Yeah, during Katrina and the Sea Devils come out of the sea, that would have... Really, and then the mayor's like, damn it, we suck. You could have probably redone, you know, Terror of the Zygons following that logic.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to anyone from New Orleans. I'm sorry. It was just too obvious, okay?
Yeah, we're going to hell. Anyway, let's see. Ark in Space again. Oh, The Reign of Terror.
Yeah, probably another premise, not story thing.
And that's pretty much about... Oh, and they were going to redo Shada.
And Claws of Exos, I thought.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Claws. Claws is in here. Oh, Claws was a six-hat line with the same 1971 serial now set in 1994. The question is why? Oh, and the Daemons. Which have been relocated to Salem, Massachusetts.
That at least makes some sense.
And then they were thinking about redoing Earthshock.
And that is the most interesting one for me, because, again, I'll say it, Philip Siegel doesn't seem to have seen beyond the Tom Baker era, so there's like one story in this whole Bible that references beyond that point.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know, it seems like to me, in this... That's like one story that every Doctor Who fan knows about. When you first start watching Doctor Who, one of the first ones you, have you seen Earthshock?
I'm just saying, it kind of proves my point. So, that, you know, not the most well-rounded fan to be making this stuff.
He should have at least seen Caves of Androzani. Now, how does the TARDIS key not fall out in the vortex when they hit turbulence?
Perhaps it's time for your review.
Oh, good, yay!
This is Michael's original review from 1996, or rather... added highlights, since the whole thing is about 100 pages long.
You want me to talk about the key or start from the beginning?
No, just do the edit highlights from the beginning. I do eventually want to get to the...
Alright, this is what I really wanted to like this show. I really did. I've been looking forward to this since the rumors about it started and dismissed every spoiler I read that might be have turned my heart against it.
Now, Michael.
Yes?
How old were you when you wrote this?
I was 23.
So, essentially the same age I am now.
Yes.
Well, angry young man.
This wasn't my best written review ever. After all, it couldn't be bad, as we feared, now then could it? And even poor quality Doctor Who was better than none at all, right? Wrong! From beginning to end, this is a travesty. And that's just plain unfair, because I feel like it's those of us who are loyal, faithful fans of Doctor Who that have been put through the ringer. We were lured in by the promise of high-budget effects and an intelligent storyline that would appease our fears and make us all happy. That the good doctor was back on our screens. Mr. Siegel, you lied.
I like how you've spelled Siegel.
Yeah, I spelled it
wrong. As if it's like Steven Seagal.
Well, maybe they're related. See, I was very angry about the Master slithering like a snake and the romance and...
You're angry about everything, man.
here's probably the most infamous line, because Sarah remembers it 10 years later. Hell, I think you would have promised a chorus line of Daleks doing the conga if it would have made us watch. I think you're going to use that in your little, like, fancy review for the two of us.
Oh, I even used that in the audio story I did. Daleks dancing the conga. I thought that was absolutely precious.
Oh, yes. Oh, and I go on. And then the funny thing is, I didn't like the first 30 minutes back in the day.
Yeah, which now we're sitting here saying is, like, the best part of it.
Yes. And then I liked McGann. I didn't really talk about Daphne Ashbrook. She didn't really make that much of an impression on me.
He liked McGann, but bear in mind, this is before he goes on about how one of the very few things that is so damn wonderful is Eric Roberts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you really want to read like the whole review, I guess we could like put a link to it.
I think we should put this online. if you want to read this in whole, there'll be a link just under this commentary on our main site. Because really, you shouldn't eat anything while you're reading it. It's right up there with Lawrence Miles' Attack on Rose as like the very epitome of fan criticism.
But you know, and I was like nobody in the fandom. I didn't have my cool. Okay, I'm not really anybody in the fandom now.
You said it, like, to me, and that was probably it.
Oh, no, it went to R.A.D.W. This went to R.A.D.W. Oh, yeah, don't you remember? Haven't I told you that I will send you the link to not only the review, but all the responses, where one person told me just to shut up and go away because Doctor Who didn't need people like me anymore.
Wow.
That if Doctor Who didn't need fans like me right now, that I should shut up until the new series got on the air, and then I could post criticisms about it.
Very nice.
So basically, it was just you go to hell.
That was a commercial break, I believe.
Yes.
One of these little, they're not really fade to blacks, they're crossfades. Interesting.
Well, probably for the DVD. You want
now,
to film.
Here we have possibly my favorite part of our whole discussion, what I've really been looking forward to.
Oh, God.
here comes one of my favorite. Oh, yeah, Possessed Grace. That's nice. Again, which demographic? Who can tell? And there's Paul McCann's wig line. That's
if
sweet.
If only we had Perry possessed, because at least she would have looked hot in the bikini. Okay, I'm sorry, what?
But would it have saved the movie? It would not. Oh, and
you know I had to throw in one Perry reference per commentary. It's in my contract.
Possessed Billy would have been better, too.
Yeah. But anyway.
But yeah, here comes our favorite guy.
Oh my God. Wait. Is he going to say his line? Is this another good line by Eric Roberts? Yes! Yes! I always dress.
Drez, I believe, is the word.
And then the Shatner pause. For the occasion. Yes!
But this is apparently wearing vestiges of the outfit he would have worn.
Yeah.
Had it not bothered the hell out of him.
And maybe that's good, because could you see him stalking around San Francisco? Okay,
not
I
in
could.
This. I think the cape was new, but it was supposed to be like this very Roger Delgado, Nehru suit-looking thing.
Which that would have actually worked better than...
Oh, yes, of course it would have.
We've got the Anthony Inley slick back hair.
Uh-huh. Now, here we go. This is the doctor's... Doctors, come on, show it. It's so pathetic. The doctor's crown of nails.
Thorns is what it... Yeah.
Well, but here it's a crown of nails. I.e. a crown of thorns. Yes. Because it's really obvious. Now, my favorite thing is that Jeffrey Sachs, in his commentary, apparently says he didn't realize about all the religious symbolism that was in the movie until after it was finished. So, I really want to talk about this because one of the interesting differences between Michael and I here is that one of us is very Christian.
Yes.
And one of us is very not. So, Michael, perhaps you'd like to tell us about how the Holy Order of the Bloodsucking Goat has changed your life.
Well, I love the goat.
No, I'm joking, of course.
That reminds me, did you ever see the preview for, like, I went to see a movie, Ten Things I Hate About You, and I just went to see it because it had in the preview the line about, you know, like, they wouldn't date the girl, and it's like, I wouldn't date her, she's the last girl on Earth, and there were goats. Are there goats? And I went to see it, and they changed the line from are there goats to are there sheep, and it was not quite as funny.
Goats are funnier.
Yeah, see. Anyway.
But anyway, yes, of course, the truth is that Michael is Christian.
Not that you can tell from these commentaries. But anyway.
In person, you'd be able to tell. Yeah. Sort of, kind of, just be like, how on earth could Sarah possibly be Christian? But, that's a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
But seriously, this is a worthy topic of discussion.
Yes.
Because the religious symbolism in this movie is so incredibly overt.
Which, this is funny because, like, I had not seen this,
yeah.
I think, since we watched it at my house.
Right, 10 years ago, and a couple weeks ago when we were preparing for this, I said, oh, Michael, I want to talk about the religious symbolism, and you said...
There is some!
I don't remember it at all!
And then I popped the tape in a VCR, and it was like, the movie's like, look, Christian symbolism, right here! It was like smacking me in the face. And then I stopped and took a break halfway through thinking, well, it's done in the first half.
Nope.
Then we get to the second half, it's like, hey, here you go, here's some more! This movie smacked me upside the head.
My favorite comment about this is apparently, they talk about this a little bit in the archive, the DWM archive for this. Apparently the BBC wrote back and said something like, it would be preferable if you liken the Doctor's resurrection, if you will, to the resurrection of Lazarus, as opposed to the resurrection of Christ, this may be more palatable to the audience. I was like, yeah. Okay.
No, maybe that does go towards explaining the snake, because, you know, the snake in the Bible is Satan.
No, it's not.
Well, it's the snake in the garden that tempts Eve.
Thank you. It's an agent of Satan, isn't it?
Well, then why would... Yeah.
I had a professor drum this into my head at one point, that the snake is not actually Satan.
And that, okay, now here's where the movie starts to slowly make less and less sense. Which, really, considering it made no damn sense until this point, is saying a lot.
So here we've got an incomprehensible storyline with the Tin Woodman here, from the Wizard of Oz, with his giant metal breastplate that apparently...
And now the Master is apparently Angel the Vampire. I don't know...
Sucking out the life force, yeah, okay.
I just, you know, is that supposed to be like, you know, oh, he kissed Grace? Ooh,
know, like he's sucking out the venom or something.
You know, he's taking, you know, I don't know. We just don't, I just don't
Who
understand.
Knows? But yeah, there's a lot
like
of...
he even runs like a pansy. No, I'm just saying.
He really is sort of, that's nice.
Yeah, we're gonna get more comments in our blog about, you people are idiots. I know one person in particular is gonna be like, you people suck.
Yeah, I know
a
couple
we know.
Myself.
So, anyway, bite me. Anyway.
But yeah, here we have the Doctor being crucified in his crown of thorns with Satan here. And it's just, it's so sad.
Okay, let me see. I'm trying, and this is like, goodness. Oh, the third time in less than a week since I've experienced this wonder. What the hell is going on? Okay, the Master is going to, the eye is going to, like, do some kind of, basically it's going to be like Turnabout Intruder from Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to switch bodies. Now this is cool, where the effects on the TARDIS.
Yeah, but that's actually going to be tampered in a minute here by the cost-cutting effects.
Oh, look, there's Eric Roberts acting.
Of video stock footage, use of other cities, and all sorts of good stuff. But seriously, this movie really starts to remember that it's not got a $100 million budget here, like, in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Well, I get this feeling they ran out of money.
I think they did.
But the moment has been prepared. Oh, I'm sorry.
Stop!
Oh, now we're going to get to one of my other favorite continuity points here in a second, which is how the hell does Grace know how to fix the TARDIS?
Oh, who knows? There's the cloister bell, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a nice little...
That's actually a decent touch. You don't have to explain it.
No. And it's actually used in the new series, too.
Yep.
This is like the longest 30 seconds in memory, because I think if you actually watch the timer, it'll actually take about a minute and a half.
And this is a good,
There he is. He's Morphin. He's a mighty Morphin Power Master.
Wow.
Oh, God. I almost want, like, when he's turning into this, you remember Aladdin, the line, you'll see how snake-like I can be. I almost keep waiting for him to say that. Shit here in the movie.
Well, there's some lovely video footage coming. Like Paris, London, because of course it's midnight across the world.
Yes,
as we all know.
Apparently, Australia was safe from being sucked through the vortex, or it already is, and nobody's noticed over at Fox News.
But these very quick cuts, these flash frames, are like a trademark of Jeffrey Sachs, the director, who is a brilliant director.
He's directed some very
diverse stuff.
What he directed that like that Michael Keaton? What was that movie? White Noise.
Oh yeah. It's like one big blockbuster. He's also directed two of the more controversial pieces of British television I can think of in recent years. Yeah. Tipping the Velvet. Oh, look, there's video effect. That's lovely.
This was the scene they used in some of the promos during X-Files.
Yes.
They use this a lot.
Oh, yes. But Tipping the Velvet, which, you know, lesbianism. And Othello, which was just a modern reworking of Othello, which incidentally starred Christopher Eccleston in a really, really creepy role. And that's, both of those are actually pretty good, but they're kind of very, very modernized.
Yeah.
And, so I'm not quite sure what's going on with Jeffrey Sachs. I'm not quite sure why he was hired.
Entering temporal orbit.
He's also famous for having done, Dr. Eyes, which was a spoof in the 70s of the fourth Doctor and Romana. Just thought you'd like to know.
And now,
More video. See, more flash frames and video footage.
And things like getting like sucked up in it. Like everyone's being beamed up or something. It's like the beaming effect from Blake 7 almost.
Yeah. Vortex.
Maybe it was an homage to Blake 7.
We're thinking too hard again.
Yeah, we're helping the lazy script writing again. Do you ever get the feeling they just made up this ending on the set as they went along and they went, we have no idea what the hell we're gonna do to end this thing?
Yep.
You know, it's almost like they helped Russell T. Davies learn how to write. Oh, I'm sorry!
Hey, I promised myself I wasn't gonna pick at the new series this time.
Oh, goodness.
Thanks a lot there, Michael.
Almost made it through a whole 90 minutes without snarking on Russell Davies. But you know, if you want to hire me to write for the show, you know, hey, you can find me. I'm online.
And this is where the master just launches himself.
Yes. And
yeah. I'm not actually quite sure how that would kill her.
She's just trying to get out of the movie at this point. She's like, I have no idea what the hell's going on.
Why does the doctor need this giant tin breastplate with, like, little buttonholes?
I don't know.
But yeah, I'm not quite sure how that would actually kill her. It doesn't seem like that hard a fall. That could kill you.
Boy, this is just...
Oh, here's Paul's stunt double.
They're just kicking the crap out of the doctor here.
And this is also where his wig line... See? Doctor's wig line.
Yes.
Yeah, bad.
Boy, that wasn't...
And that's a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy line.
Yeah. We should probably get into the Hitchhiker's... Well, on our Christmas Invasion commentary, which will be coming...
Oh, yeah. Speaking of... Well, maybe we should save that for the Christmas Invasion.
Yeah. No, we don't need to talk about that here, but I'm just saying, you know, Douglas Adams' influence is all over that thing.
Oh, yeah. But,
And so you shine a bright light on the Master, and that defeats him. I don't quite understand.
I at least like that they left the Doctor being compassionate.
Yes. No, I will not. I will die first.
Yeah. So we covered all the bases here? Are all our notes?
Let's see what our
let's
notes
Let's run over
say.
Our notes real quick here.
Eric Roberts sucks. Paul McGann, wonderful. McCoy, the TARDIS. Continuity. The Eye of Harmony is not supposed to be in the TARDIS, I'm just saying.
They've retconned it now. It's okay.
Let's see. The Bible, yeah.
The Weekly Bible, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Philip Seagal had only seen through Legopolis.
Basically. Oh!
Visual style and lighting? Bloody obvious Christian symbolism. That was
there you
that
go.
Was your
That's
words.
Very nice. Nice music in this. I'm
oh, yeah,
say that.
You forgot that part.
Yeah, I really, really like the music to the TV movie. Even if it's not always appropriate to what's going on screen, it's a really good score CD, and I play it a lot like while I'm writing.
Well, I could see that it would be good to listen to, because it's one of those, I wonder if, you know, have you ever gotten, like, you know, you like a, like, let's say you like John Williams.
Right.
And you got a John Williams, like, you get the Star Wars soundtracks to come out before the movie.
Sure, right.
I wonder, it would be interesting if you had not seen a telemovie, what you would imagine as the action to go along with that music.
Well, it's interesting because I got the CD and I actually hadn't seen the movie for a while. Yeah. And I didn't see the movie for a while after that, so when I finally, having been very used to the CD, popped the movie back on, I was surprised sometimes when the music was used.
Yeah.
Like the tinkly fairy music,
Which
I refer to as the Tinkerbell music, pops up with this weird bit where the doctor's like going through hospital lockers, whereas it feels much more to me like a cityscape sort of thing. So it's very weird. Oh, then, look, more religious symbolism.
And then here's, like, the ending.
But he brings them back to life. He is Christ.
Has he taken them back in time, like, 2 days so it hasn't happened yet?
Something.
Which,
who knows, Michael?
I don't know. I think they were just on the set going, Paul, we'll just make up some crap and we'll just go with that.
It's a little different in the rough cut. In the rough cut, it doesn't make it quite look so fairy-ish.
Well, I just wonder... How much of that is... It seemed like there were a lot of cooks in the stew for this script.
Yeah, the rough cut makes it look a little more like the Doctor is not planning for them to be revived. Like, it just happens and he's stunned kind of thing.
But I just wonder how much of these last 20 minutes was... I'd be interested to see, like, scripts and revisions and, you know, who went there. And, you know, did the BBC say, no, you can't do this, and Fox wanted this, and it became this incredibly bad amalgam of... some storylines that could have been good if, instead of trying to be like four or five different things, you had to have the action, you had to have the Christian symbolism, you had to have...
I'm not sure where the symbolism came from.
Grace coming back to life.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I think it was a case very much of 5 years working on this project, yeah. You know, a derivative of many different scripts. And in a lot of ways, we should be thankful. He's the Eighth Doctor and not the First Doctor or the Fifth Doctor, and that it still resembles Doctor Who vaguely as we know it.
Well, and I wonder, how much pressure were they under to write this? And then, you know how it is when you're under pressure to write something and you think, and you get it done, and you're just like, oh, thank God, it's done. And it seems incredibly brilliant and great, and then, 2 weeks later, after you've turned it in and got it back and gotten the F.
I think that is partially what happened, because I think they did kind of run out of time. I mean, they got this slot for a TV movie, and then they had to meet it. It was filmed, I think, 3 months before it aired.
Which,
very quickly.
Yeah.
So, I'd say that is some of it. Now, thankfully, Paul McGann has gone on to do audio stories. Big Finish proves just what a good doctor he is, or would have been, or whatever you want to say.
Yeah, and I think, he's the Eighth, and then they went on the Eighth Doctor novels, which are kind of a bland.
They're very bland. Until he loses his memory and becomes a whole different character.
Yeah. I still think The Dying Days is the best Eighth Doctor novel that I have read.
The best one for me is Alien Bodies, which I can't believe I'm saying. It's one of the few Doctor Who books, possibly the only one, I would actually call literature.
Yeah.
And perhaps better literature than it is Doctor Who. But it's still, the Doctor is remarkably bland in it himself.
Yeah.
It's just a very good book. The Dying Days picks his character a lot better.
Yeah.
Pegs his character, I should say. But for me, the Eighth Doctor never came back to life again totally.
And little nerdy guy got a kiss.
Yeah.
Which they don't explain who he is or why he's there.
Yeah, they do. He's the guard they ran into later, and he's going to save the world one day.
Oh, and here, speaking of similar, he walks on water here at the end.
There was a commercial... there was a commercial break right there, which I remember because it ticked me off. I rewatched this movie the night after broadcast, and my mother made me stop it right here because we had to get up early the next morning. I was like, but there's 3 minutes left! And she didn't get it, so... Video stock footage of fireworks.
Wow,
Do I hate video stock footage in a film.
Sonic screwdriver.
It's so cheap. I mean, it looks so different. I mean, you can tell the difference, can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's not just me.
And now Chang Li leaves.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, so he's dispensing wisdom to all these people.
Yeah, Mr. Prophecy here.
He's basically, become Dionne Warwick.
Nice.
Only without his own 800 number. See, there you go. He walks on water.
Well, maybe Ian Levine called him up.
Maybe he can find some footage from Mind of Evil. In case you don't know what we're talking about, Ian Levine posted in Outpost Gallifrey that he's hired a psychic to find some of the lost Doctor Who footage, which... If it works, that's great. If not, I find it very amusing.
I think I'll stick with very amusing. Yeah.
Well, I don't want Ian to get mad at us. Yeah.
Ian's mad at the rest of the world.
Oh, that is true.
So, watching this again, because I did watch it again. I watched it last year, actually, the couple of days before Rose premiered. Yeah. Oh, I hate that composite shot.
And why does he kiss her again? There's no point to this.
It doesn't bother me anymore.
Actually, I will give the BBC novels some credit. They kind of pick up on this. But they make the Doctor less aware of the fact that women find him attractive.
Right. Yeah.
Though it does get kind of pathetic when, you're in this 12th book and Sam still thinks the Doctor's hot and you're kind of like, okay, whatever, move on. You know?
They do a little more with that in the audio ones, too, where Charlie is obviously.
Yeah, but I mean, that's... I don't know.
And
I
think the Doctor actually responds.
Well, he's lonely. He hasn't had any since
Romana. Watching this again, having watched it, a year ago for the first time in a long while, I watched it before Rose premiered.
Yes.
Watching it again now, I can be entertained by it. It's not great television.
If you turn off your brain, it's complete, total, great entertainment. You think...
But there's lots of elements to it I like. It's shot very well. Paul McGann is very good. I mean, there's a lot worse Doctor Who in the world. now that I've stopped thinking about it as the end-all, be-all of new Doctor Who, it's much more acceptable.
Well, I certainly liked it more this time, 10 years later. I'm just wondering if maybe I should give Web Planet another try.
We'll have to do Web Planet.
Well, you know, I'm waiting for the DVD to make the jump to America. Right. But since we're getting a Tom Baker story later in the year of Genesis of the Daleks, I'm not expecting Web Planet to jump across the pond anytime soon.
Well, and we're getting that beginning set in March.
Yeah, so I figure that'll be...
Any last comments?
Thank you for listening.
We're sorry. We really did try to make notes this time.
I think we did a very good job.
I think we did okay for just two of us.
But,
It's a little harder to keep up these hour-and-a-half things.
See, we're much better when we have the episodes. We can take a break and...
Yeah, and there's only 45 minutes. We have to cram it all in.
Yes.
Because we did kind of start to run out of stuff to talk about.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah,
we can make up some things. No, I don't know.
Did I ever tell you I had a crush on Paul McGann?
I don't think so. Which, that's ironic.
He's very handsome. He's a good actor.
We did not see these credits scroll like this in the Fox movie.
Nope.
Because they were all squishied so we could see previews for other Fox great shows.
Yep.
So anyway, I guess this is where I thank you for tuning in to Two Insane Fans podcast/commentary. And there's a lot of other commentaries and podcasts you could listen to, and you've chosen to listen to ours, which proves that... you need help.
What he said.
See y'all soon.
Bye.